来。来，你的最后一个，点那个。哦，好啊，好，你香呢？No one that came today. Your mom, ask your mom to come. The candle. Yeah, to light the candle. Yeah. Let me get it, get it. Get it, get it. Ah. Tell her to put the incense. Okay, come. Okay, let us stand. Piyong na la. Offer triple gem more important. After Thai Narai offer. After the class. Come. Let us gather for puja. Come. Piyong, that's it. Puja. Okay, start with the tray. Sadhu.Sadhu, sadhu, 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 sadhu.Sadhu, sadhu, 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 sadhu.Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu, 那个最后啊，等一下，sadhu, sadhu, 呀，可以offer那个，sadhu, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.Sadhu, sadhu, 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 sadhu.Sadhu, sadhu, 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 sadhu.Sadhu, sadhu, let three offer come. Sadhu, sadhu, put back. Sadhu, okay, now we'll offer the rest of the item. Sadhu, 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 sadhu.Sadhu, sadhu. Okay, you all can be seated. Today been a special day. It so happened it is also Teacher's Day, 16th of May 2017. And I think Kayamita has, on behalf of all Kayamitas, use our Kayamita fund to buy this bouquet of flower and fruits.For offering to your teacher. So we'll do that think later, yeah, after our puja. So for the time being, let us compose our mind, develop the spiritual faculty, sada, virya, then mind following visha, commence the puja. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Po. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Po. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Po. Namo Guan Sing Pusa. Namo Guan Sing Pusa. Namo Guan Sing Pusa. Namo Amitofo. Namo Amitofo. Namo Amitofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Arahang Samma Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami. Supatipano Bhagavato Sakkasangho Sanghang Namami. Okay, you all can be seated. Turn to page 1 of your chanting book. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panati pata veramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Adina dana veramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Kamesu mechachara veramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Musawada viramani sikapadang samadhiyami. Surameraya majapamadatana viramani sikapadang samadhiyami. Now you chant the padipa puja, offering of light. Gandasarapaditena Dipena tamadang sina Tiloka dipang sambutang Pujayami tamonudang Ganda sambarayutena Dopena hang sugang hina Pujaye pujaniyang tang Puja bhajana mutamang วันนากันดากุโนเปตังเอตังกสุมาสันตตินปูจายามิโมนินดาสสิริปาดาสารโรเหปูเจมิบดังกสุเมนาเนนาปุณเณนามเทนาเชโหทุโมคังปูปังเมลายติยัตตาอิดังเมกายโยตตายติวินาสบาวังอาดิวาเสทุโนบันเทปานิยังปริกาปิตังอานุคัมภังอุปาทายะปาติกันหาทุมุตตมังอาดิวาเสทุโนบันเทปาเลปริกาปิตังอานุคัมภังอุปาทายะปาติกันหาทุมุตตมังอาดิวาเสทุโนบันเทโบจานังปริกาปิทังอานุคัมภังอุปาทายะติกันหาตุมุตตมัง Now let us chant our puja inspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all this puja offering. Significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha.Bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and to help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of clear water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of defilement within our mind.Significance of offerings of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense, which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity,and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition as soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body.So that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana, making of overall aspiration. By the power of these merits, born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of sada, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya,be further strengthened until they become balas or powers, sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the conditions and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us pay homage to Triple Jam.Buddhang pujayami Dhammang pujayami Sanghang pujayami Okay, you can be seated. We will have our meditation. We will have about 25 minutesOf meditation. We are off the light, then you can commence your meditation. Oh, okay. Sadhu. remember to relax body and mind, then silence everything, and remember the four support for awareness-based meditation. The first support is just relax, relax into every mind state that arises, no matter what is it. Then physically relax body, mentally relax the mind, completely free the mind from all thinking, from all attachment or activity or whatever. Just talk to the mind. You will deal with it after the meditation. Whatever that the mind want you to do, you just tell the mind, have mercy on me. Please do not distract me. For this is the moment of meditation that I will develop to train my mind, to silence the mind, to develop the spiritual faculty of sati, leading to paciti, the tranquility of mind, stillness of mind. Then after you relax, you should silence everything and just maintain the silent mind, the awareness within. Don't do anything. If you still need an object of meditation to help you stabilize the mind or anchor the mind to be aware, to be mindful, then you can use that skillful means to train that mind, to anchor it, to stabilize it. Then whatever mind state that arises, you just relax into it. Even when it starts to develop absorption, concentration or whatever, remember to just relax into it. And feel yourself soothingly relaxed, completely relaxed without thought, completely silent without thought. Then the third support is, of course, after you relax, you maintain awareness, then maintain it for as long as you can. Technically, it's 24 hours. Then finally, when you are already very skillful, the final support is trust. Trust your nature to do the meditation. No more thought, no more thinking. You just relax, silent and aware, and let your nature do the meditation. To reach that stage, you must have already developed the stability of mindfulness until your mind has entered sati, paciti. Then only you can do the fourth support, otherwise the fourth support cannot come about. The fourth support will only surface after you have stabilized your sati. Until your mind has entered sati, then you are able to have that tranquility of mind, stillness of mind. Then you can stay at around your heart area, relax everything and just silent. Then let this silent mind, paciti, detect the gateway. Then when it detects, many things will happen. It will meditate on its own. The nature will meditate on its own, and that is the fourth support, trust. Okay, I'll let you meditate. Then I will ring the bell after about 15 to 20 minutes. For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who have enough, slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Then turn to page 6. We will do the invocation to the depths. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta Chakawalesu Atra gacchantu devata Saddhammang muni rajasa Sunantu sakamokkadang Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa Iti peso bhagava arahang sama sambuddho Vijacarana sampano sugato lokavido Anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati Satta deva manusanang Buddho bhagavati Swakato bhagavata dhammo Sanditiko akaliko Ehi paseko Opanayiko Pachyatang veditabho Vinohiti Supatipano bhagavato Savakasango Ujupatipano bhagavato Savakasango Nyayapatipano bhagavato Savakasango Samichi patipanno bhagavato savaka sangho Yadidang chatari purisa yogani Atta purisa pugala Esa bhagavato savaka sangho Ahuneyo, pahuneyo, dakineyo, anjali karaniyo, anutarang punyaketang lokasati. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Triple Gemma. Vedang Pujami Dhammang Pujami Sanghang Pujami. Okay. relax body and mind, then you can be seated. Yeah? And we will continue with our today's Tuesday class. So as I've explained earlier on, today happened to be the 16th of May 2017, which coincides with our Teacher's Day. Yeah? So I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all Kayana Mitas for all their very sincere and good wishes. Oh, the book is in the box. Yeah, it's in the box. You can have yours. Han, you can collect it there. Yeah. You can pay to Sister Pak Mansuri. Anybody who hasn't got this book, The Buddha and His Teaching. Okay, good. Like I said, it happened to be Teacher's Day. Then we are going to start on the new topic. The title of the book is The Buddha and His Teaching by Venerable Narada. This is a very good book. It's printed by BMS, Buddhist Missionary Society, Malaysia. And I remember this book during the early days when I started to study the Dhamma. This is the book which was very popular at that time. It gives a complete life history of the Buddha since his birth until his parinibbana. Then they also incorporated all of his essential teachings while he was alive. If you look at the content page, you will understand. There is an introduction. We will read through them afterwards. Then we have the first section, which is the Buddha himself. Chapter 1 is on the Buddha from birth to renunciation. Then his struggle for enlightenment. Then how he became the Sammasambuddha. Then what happened after the enlightenment. Then how he was invited to expound the Dhamma. Then the first sermon or the first discourse, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, which he proclaimed and delivered to the five ascetics. Then after that, his teaching of the Dhamma. Then moving on to the Buddha and his relative. The Buddha and his relative continue. There are two chapters on that. Then the Buddha's chief opponent and supporters. Then the Buddha's royal patron, the Buddha's ministry, the Buddha's daily routine, and his parinibbana. Then on the section on his teaching, the Dhamma, the teaching of the Buddha, we have what is Buddhism, some saline characteristics of Buddhism, the Four Noble Truths, karma, what is karma, the working of karma, nature of karma, then what is the origin of life, the Buddha on the so-called Creator God, reason to believe in rebirth, then the wheel of life, which is Paticca Samuppada, the dependent origination or dwelling, then modes of birth and death, plane of existence, how rebirth takes place, what is it that is reborn, the no-soul theory, moral responsibility, karmic descent and karmic ascent, a note on the doctrine of karma and the rebirth in the West. Then what is Nibbana? Characteristics of Nibbana, the way to Nibbana 1 and 2. Then Nivarana or hindrances. Then the way to Nibbana, chapter 3, volume 3. Then the state of an Arahant, their Bodhisattva ideal, paramitas or paramis, or perfections. Then the four Brahma Vihara, the sublime state of mind, the eight worldly condition, Attaloka Dhamma. Then the problems of life. Then we have the appendix, Mangala, Parabhava, Vasala and Ratana Sutta, followed by Metta Sutta and Satipatthana Sutta. Then you have the appendix. This book has been printed several times. The first edition was in 1964. Second edition, 1973. Then the third edition was 1977. Then we have the fourth edition, 1988. So 1988 is the latest edition. So basically, this is the book that we are going to go through. As I've explained, the reason why I want to go through this book is I came to realize most of the Kayanamita who came later, they don't have some basic exposure to the Buddhist teaching. They started learning when they joined my class. Whereas some of the older Pesh who have already been through the teaching on their own during the early days, especially those who started from Brickfield or even Subang Jaya Buddhist Association or the various Buddhist societies and organizations, they have some form of systematic study. And these are taught during the early days, like I used to share with you. I went to Brickfield. I started quite early. I went to Brickfield in the year 1975 when I was admitted to University of Malaya. 1975, I think May. Then that first day, like I shared with you all on many occasions, I was introduced to our late Chief Reverend K. Sri Damananda, Dr. K. Sri Damananda. He was delivering a Dhamma talk in one of our faculty, the science faculty. Yeah, come, Sadhu, maybe come. Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay, no problem. Thank you. Sadhu, huh? Yao Sama, yesterday Teacher's Day. Sadhu, rejoice, maybe. If you got the time, you can come back. They will be a bit late today. Oh, yeah, okay, you go ahead. Sadhu, thank you. Then, I think 2 days back, my wife also received another cake from Wu Bing Xing Sir. So tonight, you got 2 cakes. To celebrate Teacher's Day. Okay, where was I? Oh, I think I know where. I told you in the year 1975, May, the first day I was introduced to Chief Reverend K. Sri Damananda, a university mate, engineering faculty. He stayed with me at First College. After dinner, he asked me, "Tio, you free or not?" I said, "Yeah, I'm free, nothing to do, first day at the uni." He said, "I take you somewhere." He didn't even tell me where. Then I followed him. So we end up in science faculty. Then for the first time, I saw a monk, Chief Reverend, our late Chief K. Sri Damananda, speak perfect, beautiful English, and very, very clear Dhamma. So there was so much joy. Then, like I relate earlier on, I received his first edition of his book, What Buddhists Believe, the red color theme copy, in the year 1971. The moment I received that book, this nature suddenly realized inside, deep inside, no need to search. That's it. This is the teaching. And all my search ceased. Then I only knew I need to meditate and understand this teaching, that's it. And that time I don't even know what was meditation. Then I met him on the first day, that's why I was full of joy. Then I realized this was the author that wrote the book. So I was listening attentively that Dhamma talk. It was an hour Dhamma talk. Then there were some question and answer. Then after that we approached him, get the address. That's how I went to Brickfield. And on the first day, I remember when I was there, the Pali chanting was like very familiar to me. And this one, the nature, like there's so much joy. Then when I was there, I was given this leaflet to follow the chanting. Then I realized I can easily follow and I can chant quite easily. Then after that, I went to the library. And that's where I found this book. Then there are some free booklets. So I took them and I read them. And the very funny thing is the moment I read, the moment I see truth, my nature understand. That's why I progress on my own, yeah, quite fast. But at that time, condition were not ready. I haven't met the real teacher. So at that time, I was still searching, despite the library with all the books, even this book. I find them very theoretical, because I only need to understand some truth about the mind, about who am I, what am I, what is this mind all about. Yeah. Then I just want to understand truth, the reality. Yeah. So it took me quite a while. Yeah. Until finally when I graduated, yeah, then the condition only arise in the year 1986. Yeah. Which was about 9 years later. Then all of a sudden after that, a lot of things happened. Then everything just fall into place. That's how the Dhamma came. The reason why I want to share this is because if you don't understand the history of the Buddha, the life history of the Buddha, and how he teach, and how he share, it's not easy to understand his teaching. But if you have an understanding of that, then all the Jataka story that you come across later on will be quite easy for you to relate to. And when you have the clear understanding, born of penetrative Dhamma awakening, even though it's just a book on his life history. Yeah. Because a lot of Dhamma friends ask me, why, Brad, do you go back to this? Because they thought this is for beginners, kindergarten, or Sunday school students. Yeah. Sunday school, they learn also the life history of the Buddha, but in a very much summarized way. So this book is supposed to be the intermediate Buddhist training text. Then later on, they have the higher, what they call the higher category. More important is to truly understand the simple teaching, then you will benefit tremendously. But if you don't have the true understanding of this simple teaching, it's not easy. You may think you know, you may think you understand in inverted comma, but these are all knowledge. The knowledge that you receive from this teaching will not be of much use because it cannot awaken your mind and it cannot bring forth the benefits for you to put it into cultivation, to put it into practice, to develop the ability to live that teaching. So that's the reason why I want to go back to this teaching before we go into the 50 Dhivan Samadhi. Otherwise it's a bit too deep for most people. But once I go through this, a lot of people who are new, they can catch up. Then from there, yeah, we will not have any more gap. We will be able to share all the higher teaching so that you all can see the beauty of the Theravada tradition. The Theravada tradition is very authentic. The Pali chanting are very, very authentic. And they still carry the words of the Buddha. The problem with Theravada is the interpretation of the teaching. The understanding of the teaching is no longer as before. Then we have the Mahayana tradition, which they call the Great Bohikong. The Mahayana tradition also got its pro and con. It has the higher teaching. It has all the beautiful Mahayana teaching incorporated beyond the normal teaching of the Theravada. But what is lacking in the Mahayana is a strong foundation of the Theravada teaching. That part most of the time is missing and is not taught in most Mahayana temples. The teaching are there in some of the sutta, but not organized, not systematic, and not that authentic as it was when it was originally proclaimed by the Buddha. So the pro and cons of Mahayana teaching is the opposite of Theravada teaching. Mahayana still have most of the teaching, but they lack the basic foundation. Then sometimes a lot of the sutta on the higher teaching, when you don't have a proper Theravada tradition, it may lead to some form of deviation. So certain aspect of the teaching, it has deviated and it has run. But for those who have awakened, it's not a problem to them because they will understand. Then the other problem with Mahayana teaching is too much of this emphasis on the sutta, all those very profound sutta, like the Heart Sutta, Surangama Sutta, the Diamond Sutta, and the various very profound sutta. Then they tend to commit to memory, even the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta. They tend to commit to memory, then using memory to expound the teaching. And because of that, a lot of the teaching is no longer like what it used to be. So that is just some background of what the Theravada and the Mahayana tradition is all about, and why we are going into this book. So now we can go to the content. Let us turn to the introduction page. Roman number 6 or 7. Roman number 7. But there is no number there. It's just before 8. I will read the introduction, then we will go through together. Many valuable books have been written by Eastern and Western scholars, Buddhists and non-Buddhists alike, to present the life and teaching of the Buddha to those who are interested in Buddhism. Among them, one of the most popular works is still The Light of Asia by Sir Edwin Arnold. Many Westerners or Western truth seekers were attracted to Buddhism by this world-famous poem. Congratulations of Eastern and Western Buddhists are due to the learned writers on their laudable effort to enlighten the reader on the Buddha Dhamma. This new treatise is another humble attempt made by a member of the order of the Sangha based on the Pali text, commentaries and tradition prevailing in Buddhist country, especially in Sri Lanka. The first part of this book deals with the life of the Buddha, the second on the Dhamma, the Pali term for his doctrine. So this word Dhamma is the teaching of the Buddha, is a Pali word for his teaching or doctrine. The Buddha Dhamma is a moral and philosophical system which expounds a unique path of enlightenment, and is not a subject to be studied from a mere academic standpoint. So this part you have to make a note. It's not a subject to be studied from a mere academic standpoint. You can study it, but you have to reflect and contemplate on it to understand it deeper. Then you have to put it into practice, cultivate it, to realize it. So spiritual teaching differ from normal knowledge-based teaching. Knowledge-based teaching is to develop just the knowledge, and to the spiritual field is just the first turning wisdom. When you study or read, we call it the phase one of Dhamma. Pariyati. Phase one of the Dhamma means the learning of the teaching. Then after that, Patipati, phase two of the Dhamma, which is to put the teaching into practice, to cultivate it, then to realize it. Then phase three will be the most beautiful. It is the fruition of your hard work. You get to reap the fruit of your hard work. That is to live the noble life of an enlightened being when you already have the Dhamma. So the Buddha Dhamma is a moral and philosophical system. The word philosophical may not be so appropriate. Moral is correct. Moral means morality. But when you talk about philosophical, philosophy means a way of thinking, a way of life. But Dhamma is not a philosophy. Dhamma is about what? Dhamma is about what? The Buddha's teaching, isn't it? What is the Buddha's teaching all about? It's about understanding truth, isn't it? So the teaching that teach you to realize and understand all this nature's truth, or all of truth that explain the way things are, is not a philosophy. It's a statement of fact. It's a statement of understanding. It's not through the thought process. It's an understanding that can be understood beyond the mind, beyond the thought process. That's why it is akalikal. The Dhamma is akalikal, beyond thought, beyond mind. So it has to be awakened too. It has to be realized. That's why this part, the word philosophical, may not be so appropriate. Then we turn to the next page. The doctrine is certainly to be studied, more to be practiced, and above all, to be realized by oneself. And this is exactly what I meant just now. The three phases of Dhamma. Mere learning is of no... How to pronounce this word? Avail. Without actual practice. The learned man who does not practice the Dhamma, the Buddha say, is like a colorful flower without sense. Beautiful flower, but don't have the nice smell or odor. So, if it's mere learning, means for knowledge sake, and you don't put it into practice, you cannot reap the fruit. So this part is very important. You have to pay attention. In fact, a lot of Buddhists, they are trapped in knowledge. They learn the teaching. They become very excited. Then they talk about it. They try to teach people and tell people how beautiful this Buddhist teaching is all about. But because they themselves didn't put it into practice, they can't really reap the fruit of it. They can't really benefit from it. So knowledge alone does not help. You can speak from knowledge and maybe explain a lot of things, but this is just theory. This is just knowledge. It is not something that you can apply into life where you can use it to live life, to help yourself, to help others, to benefit yourself and benefit others. Not until you have the ability to understand it, realize it, and make use of it. It is still theoretical. Then we move on. He who does not study the Dhamma is like a blind man. Agree or not? Without the Dhamma, actually you are like a blind man. Why? Because you don't know what life is all about. And when you don't know what life is all about, how can you live life? That's why you are like blind. You are blind to truth. Understand? You may be conscious of life. You may be able to perceive a lot of things through your mandipa. But you are blind in the sense that you don't understand truth. You are blind to many, many things. But he who does not practice the Dhamma is comparable to a library. So the library is the same, huh? A lot of information. Huh? That's why you go to the library to do research. But if you store up all the knowledge, then you are like a library. Not much use. So he who does not practice the Dhamma or put the Dhamma into cultivation is comparable to a library. It's just knowledge. You just carry them. There are some hasty critics who denounce Buddhism as a passive and inactive religion. This is unwarranted criticism. It's far from the truth. How many of you have heard of this? Of the critics who denounce Buddhism as a passive and inactive religion. You came across or not? Have you ever heard people telling you Buddhism is very passive and inactive? Come, we just... pass the mic to Chui. I agree with Chui. You feel that way too, huh? Now I just share it. If you want to elaborate on it, you can. Passive and inactive.
Because a lot of them just keep quiet and they don't seem to have any views on anything. And then when you ask something, they just look at you blankly. And you wonder what's going on with them. You know, and nobody wants to take anybody. Everybody is so kiasu, everything.
We tend to hear about this when we mingle with the masses. During the early day, it's the same. Before I continue, I'd like to thank Chui for that very important sharing. It's just like what you have heard from Chui. Most Buddhists, I find them very quiet, then non-aggressive. I don't know due to why, due to what reason. Maybe you all can let me know why are they that way. So if they are passive and inactive because of certain reason, then maybe there is some truth in what people said. When you compare how other religions propagate their teaching, do you realize that this word, passive and inactive, is in a way quite relevant to our Buddhist community? Because in other type of religion, in particular Christianity, they are very organized. Do you realize that? But when you look at the Buddhist teaching, it's like quite fragmented, isn't it? Fragmented in the sense that you have one small group here, another small group there, then maybe one of the older tradition, a bigger group here. Then if you restrict to Theravada, this is very pronounced. But when you expand it to Mahayana, then you see it quite differently. Because Mahayana, they got the various very major tradition, like Ciji, Fogong San, Fagu San, and also some recent tradition from Taiwan. They have this what they call I forgot already. There's one tradition we went, we visited the place. What was the name already? It's a Chan Si. I forgot already what Chan Si. Never mind. Anyway, all this, they are quite global in their setup. So that's why you can see that they are a lot more organized than they have done a lot of humanitarian services, and also a lot of Dharma propagation, including the Buddhist teaching. There are also various temples, especially Pho Quang. They are an organization which emphasize a lot on Buddhist education. Right, Tsuchi is more towards the humanitarian aspect, compassion in action. And Fakusan, the tradition, is more on meditation. Then, with regards to the Theravada tradition, it's mainly on a like voluntary basis. When you have the interest, when you come to the temple, then you ask around or you go around and find your own way to receive the teaching or the Dhamma. That was what I experienced when I went to Brickfield. Even though I came on the recommendation of Chief Reverend, I remember the first day I went there, nobody attend to me. But because of my past, I was able to fit in. Then I have to find my way around the temple to understand the temple setup. Then I bump into the library. Then from there, as I continue to attend, I start to meet up with people. But it's always not the other way around, understand? Whereas you go to church or other places, there will be people who will attend to you and welcome you, and talk to you and share a lot of things to you. It's not about good or bad, right or wrong. It's about how active the people behind that tradition are. There are certain things that we can improve upon if we want to share this teaching with the world. Buddhism, I realize, it came from a background which is very different, a tradition which is very different, because it's not an organized religion where you have a very systematic setup and you develop the ability to set up the network to propagate and share all this. It's just like something that you need to go and look for. That's the reason why in the early days I always ask this question. As somebody new to the Dhamma, how can I develop understanding of the teaching of the Dhamma? Well, I myself took quite a while to really find truth. It took me almost 9 years to really bump into somebody who can give me the real teaching, who can share with me the true teaching, until I met Master Xuan Hua in the year 1986. Then after that, 87, 88, 89, I met all my other teachers. Ajahn Yantra, I met him in early 1988. 86, 87, I met Master Xuan Hua. But before that, I was exposed to Chief Reverend, the Friday talk. Then I met Rav Mahinda. I should thank Rav Mahinda for the early days teaching, and also Sister Sumitra. Then later on, I traveled to Thailand, because of Ajahn Yantra. Then I met his teacher, Ajahn Buddhadasa. Then I met Mahabhuva, long time Mahabhuva. And I also met many good Thai masters and teachers. Then I came across Ajahn Chah's book, and I met quite a number of Ajahn Chah's Western disciples. Some of them are really good. In fact, most of them are good. But I met some who are really very good. Then I also met this Ajahn Jagaro. I got quite good affinity with Ajahn Jagaro. Then there is this Sangharaja, I think Sangharaja. I forgot his name already. He was the head of the Thai Sangha. He was also Ajahn Yantra's teacher. I also met him. Then got some of his book. He gave us his book when we were in Bangkok. So these were the condition behind. Then at that time, after my search, when I came to the understanding, then I reflected back, how can this teaching be explained to the world so that the world can understand, so that this teaching can be received, cultivated, realized, and allowed to continue on, so that all this Kayanamitta who has the Dhamma can be a blessing to all. That's the reason why I came out to share. And you all should thank Yun Chan for requesting me to come out 3 times. And because of that, there were a lot of other conditions that spin off this Kayamita shape organization, Relatives Kayamita. And now we are very lucky because beginning of this year, we got all the good condition to set up the website, and now the talk, the audio file, the transcript, all of the sharing, the activities, they can be stored in the website, and people can have easy access to it. And with this, a lot more people can gain from it and benefit from it, especially Kayamitas. I have a lot of very good feedback. A lot of Kayamita now, they start to have this understanding, and they call me up and even text me and thank me. He said, "Ratio, before this website come out, we really got no way of listening. It's only like all the WhatsApp you receive, the weekly WhatsApp you receive. What happened is, you don't know where to store it, except some Kayanamita like Chin Hao they all, PG Pulian they all, where they make it a point, even Alicia they all, they make it a point to download themselves, then store in memory stick and all those things. Then when they free, they go back and listen to it, retrieve it. But this one is very messy because you cannot go through the file, and you have to be really keen and always keeping a breath with it. Then you stand that chance of listening continuously and attentively. But for the rest who don't have that capability or don't have that type of vigorous interest, they find it very difficult. So now that the website is out, I realized quite a number of them, they went in and listened. And then after that, they share with me, they say, "Thank you so much, Ratio. Because without listening from there, you really cannot benefit much from what was being shared." And now the sharing is, in fact, starting to become more and more different. It's more towards the cultivation part now. In fact, today one of the Kayamita also called me. She said, because Teacher's Day, she said it's really, really something that she wanted to share with me. That's why she called me, I think almost easily 20 minutes or so. She said there were a lot more that I would like to share and express the gratitude and thanks, because she has benefited so much, and she is now able to use what I shared with the understanding, her own understanding, to help others and to bring forth benefits to others. And she talked about her experiences and what she went through and how she has actually understood life and helped so many people. Then she said she may not be frequently attending the class like last time, but she make it a point to listen to all the talk, yeah, or most of the talk, the sharing. And she said, "Brother Teo, you don't worry. I may not be there physically, but I am there with all your files and audio recording and all those things." And this sharing and teaching is so different that it has touched the heart of many people. Yeah. And through all this, it will really become beneficial. Yeah. So hopefully when we finish this particular book, it will add in more depth, yeah, to beginners, to those who want to understand the teaching in a very systematic way. Yeah. And this sharing is going to be very helpful. Mm. Okay, now we go on. Yeah. We have finished the part on passive and inactive. Huh? So that is just what it is now, or maybe earlier on, the Buddhist community's tradition is such that they are passive and inactive most of the time. But I found recently, the Buddhist group within the Theravada tradition and Mahayana tradition, they have come together and organized more and more of this, what they call inter-committee or society sharing to help propagate the Dhamma. Yeah. I have seen Nalanda doing a lot of this work. Yeah. Nalanda, and they are organizing many things. Yeah. So it's a good sign. Yeah. And hopefully all this can slowly build up, yeah, and spin off many more of this more active Buddhist group. Yeah. So all this smaller group, when they come together, they will be a force to be reckoned. Then the other group that just came into birth not long, I think, the Theravada Consultative Council, where they're supposed to rope in all the Buddhist group or the Theravada tradition into one organization, then from there become more active in the propagation and all those things. Mm. So hopefully all this can come about. But what I see more important is to have the Dhamma first. You have not really cultivated and realized the Dhamma. There's a limit to what you can do. Yeah. That's the reason why in the early years, when some of these Buddhist organizations call me in to help them improve on their setup and committee and all those things, then in the sharing, I did mention, it has to start from leadership by example. So all those that are in the EXCO committee, or the Buddhist people who are leading all this organization, if they can themselves put into practice the Dhamma and develop the understanding, then they can really become very effective leaders. Then through leadership by example, through their own understanding of the true Buddha Dhamma and the way they lead their life, it can touch the heart of many people. And once you have this group of people who lead and yet have the Dhamma, then the Buddhist community will not be what it is like before. Yeah. It's just like that book what happened to that book? The SJBA talk one, Kayamita Shiv one. We supposed to send for printing or what?
No.
It's on the website. Oh, on the website only?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought we're supposed to print out and send for printing. Yeah, I know, photos that one. But later on, we're supposed to do out a format. Oh, never mind, you do out a format for me. Yeah, I'm supposed to print that book. Because that book is very important on my Kayanamitaship. How to establish a community of Kayanamitas, means Dharma friends. And that one can really make the Buddhist group active again. Then it can bring for a lot of fellowship, interaction, understanding. And it also describes how to develop the blueprint and how to implement all those things so that it can become a living reality for the Buddhist community. And the day that we look forward to is when all Kayanamitas really sincerely walk the Dhamma with true understanding. Then later on, as this process continues, there will be more and more Kayanamitas who has the Dhamma. Then all this will touch the heart of living being. From one, it will touch many. Then many, it will touch many, many more. Then this will spin off beautifully. Yeah. Remind me, relative. Get the format out. Get the format out. So I will just go through it. Then we finalize it. Then we print it. Okay. Then we move on. The Buddha was the first most active missionary in the world. He wandered from place to place for 45 years, preaching his teaching to the masses and the intelligentsia. Till his last moment, he served humanity both by example and by precepts. His distinguished disciple followed suit. Penniless, they even traveled to distant land to propagate the Dhamma, expecting nothing in return. This is very true, because of the monk's rules or precepts. They are not supposed to touch money. So penniless, they travel to distant land to propagate the teaching and expect nothing in return. Then the Buddha says, strive on with diligence or heedfulness were the last words of the Buddha. No emancipation or purification can be gained without personal striving. So this one, we have to qualify it a bit. When the Buddha says, strive on with diligence, or with heedfulness, it doesn't mean you, in your cultivation, you put in effort and strive to cultivate. No, he says strive on with heedfulness. Heedfulness means you determine strongly to cultivate this quality of mind which he called heedfulness, which is mindfulness. Develop it, then stabilize it, then use it to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by him. So heedfulness got two parts. The Buddha said, the constantly meditative, ever mindful. You combine these two, it becomes heedfulness. So ever mindful means you must train this mind to have mindfulness until it's ever mindful, means very stable. Then use it to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is the Noble Eightfold Path. And that is what heedfulness is all about. Actually, you got a question? Correct. The English translation
is actually in the
Pali. Apamadena Sambadeta. Strive on with heedfulness. It's Apamadena. Correct. That's why I say some of these English translations are not accurate. Off the mic. Yeah, thanks for that clarification. It should be strive on with heedfulness, not diligent. Heedfulness. So heedfulness is to train the mind to have this quality of mindfulness, which is very stable. That's why the Buddha called it the constantly meditative. And ever mindful. Ever mindful means you must have this ability to be mindful throughout the day. So the striving, which is the effort part, is not for the meditation. It's for the training of the mind to have this quality of heedfulness. Then we continue. No emancipation or purification can be gained without this personal striving to be heedful. As such, petitional and intercessory prayer are denounced in Buddhism and in their state is meditation. Actually, this one, when you read through with your understanding now, you will know the person who wrote this book don't really have the full understanding of meditation. You look at this word, then we discuss it. Petitional and intercessory prayer. Prayer is what you call, what you mean by prayer means you just pray, understand that? Whereas the Buddhist teaching is not about prayer. It's about making aspiration, making vow. But the Buddha never asked you to pray. Pray for good luck. Pray for long life. No. He has blessing. He invoked the power of merits to bless you to have long life, good health and other things. But he never said pray and you will be given. No. So this is the aspect of the teaching that is different in the Buddhist understanding. Then he said, instead, what is emphasized is meditation, which is correct. But when he said, which leads to self-control, this part you have to be careful. It's not about control and suppression. You understand? It's a realization. So, meditation which leads to the realization, not self-control. As you cultivate, you develop purification of mind. Then, of course, finally, it leads to enlightenment. Both meditation and service form a saline characteristics of Buddhism. So these two has to go together. If you just meditate and don't have the love and compassion to come out and help people, there is no service. Then it is a one-sided practice of cultivation. So that's why it's written here, meditation and service form a saline characteristics of Buddhism. In fact, all Buddhist nations grew up in the cradle of Buddhism. Do no evil, that is, be not a curse to oneself and others, was the Buddha's first advice. This was followed by his second admonition, do good, that is, be a blessing to oneself and others. Then his final exhortation was purifying one's mind, which was the most important and the most essential. So this one comes from the advice of the Buddha. Can such a religion be termed inactive and passive? So the author is trying to justify that Buddhism, because of the way the teaching is, cannot be said to be passive or inactive. It may be mentioned that among the 37 factors that lead to enlightenment, virya, or spiritual zeal, the word should be spiritual zeal, occurs 9 times. Clarifying his relationship with his follower, the Buddha state, you yourself should make the exertion. He used the word exertion. Actually, it's the spiritual faculty of virya. The Tathagata are mere teacher. This part we have gone through. The Tathagata is the Buddha. The Buddha indicates the path and it is left for us to follow the path to obtain our purification. He again used the word self-exertion. It's virya, spiritual zeal, play an important part in Buddhism. By oneself is one purified, by oneself is one defiled. This is a very important statement. You can understand this statement or not? Very important. Here, the oneself is your form and mind, and it's not your true mind. When there is no wisdom, it will lead to coming negativity. That's why by oneself is one defiled. But when there is wisdom and understanding, by oneself is one purifying. You will realize the truth. You will awaken to the truth. Bound by rules and regulations, bhikkhus can be active in their own field without trespassing their limits, while lay followers can serve their religion, country and the world in their own way, guided by the Buddhist principle. So this is the synergy part. The Buddha set up the Sangha to be separate from the laity. So it's a synergy. The laity will provide support for the Sangha members, and in return the Sangha member will provide the fertile ground for them to receive merits and the teaching. Because when the Sangha members seriously cultivate, they are worthy of respect, offering, give, and hospitality and all those things. Buddhism offers one way of life to bhikkhu and another to the lay follower. In one sense, all Buddhists are courageous warriors. They do fight, but not with weapons and bombs. They do kill, but not innocent people, women and child. So what do they kill? What do they kill? Defilement and kilesa. With whom and with what do they fight? Whom do they mercilessly kill? They fight with themselves. For man is the worst enemy of man. Mind is their worst foe and best friend. Ruthlessly, they kill the passion of lust, hatred, and delusion that resides in their mind. By morality, concentration, and wisdom. These three words, they always translate wrong. Especially the second word. The second word, they use concentration. Concentration is a Hindu word. The Hindu meditation use that word a lot. They always talk about concentration. So in Pali, what the Buddha teaches, sila, samadhi, and panya. Which translate into morality, which is the precept aspect, morality. This is the precepts. Then you have what they call samadhi. Samadhi is collectedness of mind, it's not concentration. Collectedness. Collected. Oh, got idea. Collected, got idea or not? Got idea there. Collectedness. And unwavering mind. So this word, they always use concentration, which is not correct. It should be collectedness and unwavering mind. It's a free mind, not in concentration, but in samadhi. So this word samadhi, P points towards a free mind, collectedness and unwavering free mind. Then the last one, wisdom, is correct. So when it comes to meditation, this word samadhi, you have to understand it clearly. Otherwise, you will get yourself entangled with the thought-based meditation or energy field meditation, which is mainly the Hindu meditation. Okay, here they use the word 5-hour defilement or kilesa. So he said, mind is our worst foe and also best friend. But when the author don't have the true understanding, they will describe it this way. What is your understanding? The problem is not with the mind, isn't it? Yeah, correct. Correct. That one, the Buddha statement is correct. So, it's not the mind is your greatest foe. You understand not? You understand not? The mind is never your enemy. And it's never your friend. Understand not? It depends on the use of the mind. Understand not? That's why when the Buddha said the mind is the forerunner of all things and mind is cheap. When mind arises, everything arises. So you must see the importance of taking care of this mind. When this mind is deluded and heedless, it will bring forth hell and problem to you. But when this mind is trained, purified, develop the wisdom, then it becomes the most beautiful things you can ever have. So it's the user of this mind that is very important. That's why you have to avoid all evil, follow his advice. Then use that mind to develop whatever goodness or wholesomeness possible. And then finally, you have to purify that mind to develop wisdom and understanding. Then you have to act with understanding. Act with that wisdom that you have developed and realized. Then this mind can become beautiful. So it's nothing to do with the mind, Anasana. It's just like money. Money is neither evil or good. It depends on the use of money. Like technology is the same. So mind is the same. Understand? Yeah? So sometimes we read through, when we have the understanding, you will come to realize that a lot of the English translation, they are not so accurate anymore because it's limited by the author's ability to understand. If he has the understanding, he will not write this way. He will write in a very different way. That's the reason why I always emphasize to you all. Last time when you read the Dhamma book, most of you would have thought there's a lot of Dhamma there. But when you have the understanding and the awakening, I tell you, you read again. You realize that book cannot read already. A lot of mistake. A lot of things not correct already. But you can accept them for what they are, because people are just the way they are. When they have that type of understanding, they will write that way. They are just the way they are. No right, no wrong. So this book is a very good guide, but based on your understanding now, you will see a lot of English word not so appropriate already. Then we go on. Those who prefer to battle with passion alone in solitude are perfectly free to do so. Bhikkhu who live in seclusion are not worthy example. To those contented ones, solitude is happiness. Those who seek delight in battling with life's problem living in the world and thus make a happy world where man can live as ideal citizen in perfect peace and harmony, can adopt that responsibility and that other's cause. Man is not man for Buddhism, but Buddhism is man for man. Okay. Then the next part. According to Buddhism, it should be stated that neither wealth nor poverty, if rigidly viewed, can be an obstacle towards being an ideal Buddhist. Ananda Pindika, the Buddha's best supporter, was a, I think must be multi-millionaire. Huh? Gatikara, who was regarded even better than a king, was a penniless porter. As Buddhism appeals to both the rich and the poor, it appeals equally to the masses and the intelligentsia. This part on poverty, huh? The reason why the Buddha set up the Sangha is also to cater for this group of people. There are people who are very poor during the time of the Buddha. Yeah. So if you are very poor, you really don't have the support, and very difficult for you to even want to be part of the noble Sangha and to develop the ability to be ordained and cultivate. But because the way the Sangha has been set up is well supported by the laities, so you don't have to worry, even you are very poor, you can still be a monk as long as you fulfill the criteria to be ordained and you fulfill the criteria to sincerely go this way, and you will be accepted. That is the other reason why the Buddha set up the Sangha and the laity tradition. And this one is what they call the tradition of Sakyamuni's lineage. Because this is what he wanted, and he believed this is a good way to help the poor and to help the lay community. Because of the Sangha, they are not allowed to touch money, so they had to rely on their karma to receive support. And because they are not allowed to touch money, they have to be worthy of offering support and all those things. So this will motivate them to cultivate. Otherwise, they will not get support. Then this will also motivate them to take care of karma, to develop the parami, the dana parami and all those things. Then in return, if they support back the ladies, this is karmic. In future, when they are born as laity, they will also receive the support from the Sangha, because when they were Sangha member, they supported the lay community. Then likewise, when they are lay people within the lay community, they supported the Sangha. So when it's time for the lay community to go forth for ordination to become Sangha members, maybe in future life, not necessarily this same life, they will also be well supported. So this is a very good synergy, a very good way of developing karmic affinity. Okay, we move on. Next page, page 11. The common folks are attracted to the devotional side of Buddhism, and its simpler ethics, while the intellect are fascinated by the deeper teaching and mental culture. So this one also cater for both. There used to be this group of people during the early day when I was in Brickfield. They say those who like to just do the devotional practice, they will come to the temple and help out in the temple. They will cook for people. They will cook for the Sunday school teachers and children. Then they will help out in a lot of devotional practices, like the Sunday service and all those things. So a lot of common folks, they like to do this. But for those who are more intellect, they are fascinated by the deeper teaching and mental culture. This one was very true when I was in Brickfield. I came to realize those educated ones, when they come, they don't like to do all those devotional things. You ask them to go and help out and cook in the temple, they don't like. Or initially even do services and all those things, they don't like. But got merits one, they want. No merit, they don't want. So they thought they want to go there and learn meditation, listen to the talk. Then of course do dana, offer dana to monks and all those things. But you say offer to Sunday school kid, they think twice. So there is a lot of this type of mentality, because at that time most of them don't have the Dhamma. They don't understand. That's why I like the Mahayana teaching. Never offend any living being or human being. Because when you offend any of them, you may be offending a potential Sama Sambuddha. You understand? So you cannot look down upon Sunday school children or those that need your help. Sometimes you may look down upon a beggar, but you will never know. That beggar could be a great being, like Vân Su, Bodhisattva, Manjushri. He liked to come in a beggar form. So if you have this prejudice mind against beggars and people who are not properly dressed up, you may lose out. Okay, then we move on. A casual visitor to a Buddhist country who enters a Buddhist temple for the first time might get the wrong impression that Buddhism is confined to rites and ceremony and is a superstitious religion which countenance worship of image and tree. This is the impression that foreigner may have. But he used the word a casual visitor. This is also the reason why I say you go to temple, most Buddhist temple, I don't know, even today is the same. They are not so caring and friendly. Do you realize? You have to ask around. Then even if you ask around, they are not that friendly. Sometimes you may just get them to direct you. I think you go and see that person. He may know. Or maybe you go and talk to the monk. These are the usual standard answer. But you don't have an information counter, a guardian, where people who are new to religion, to your temple, you can advise them, you can give them some understanding and all those things. I find this lacking in Buddhist temple or way places. Okay, we move on. Buddhism, being tolerant, does not totally denounce such external forms of reverence as they are necessary for the masses. One can see with what devotion they perform such religious ceremony. Their faith is increased thereby. Buddhists kneel before the image and pay their respect to what the image represents. Understanding Buddhists reflect on the virtue of the Buddha. They seek not worldly or spiritual favor from the image. The Bodhi tree, on the other hand, is a symbol of enlightenment. So all this you need to explain to people, otherwise the misunderstanding can be very real. Understand? We heard a lot in the early days, especially Western religion, they will come and say, why you want to join Buddhism? Buddhism don't have a god. They are idol worshipper. Their teacher, Sakyamuni Buddha, the Buddha, is not a god. He's just like an ordinary man. What can an ordinary man do to you? So these are the things they will talk about Buddhism. Then also they say Buddhists are idol worshipper. Or when they say this, how do you feel? How do you feel? And I find that not many Buddhists can answer this type of question, you know. When they say you are idol worshipper, how do you answer them? How do you answer them? Yeah, we are not worshipping that image, understand? No? We recall to mind his great qualities, his great virtue, his great wisdom. And after knowing who he is, we have this deep respect and gratitude towards the Buddha, because he is not only enlightened, he is the fully enlightened. If you don't have this understanding, you cannot answer. Understand? Huh? It's just like they say, the olden days people, they worship the thunder. Understand? They think God is angry. They worship the sun. They worship even animal like the cow. But they have their belief. The Hindus, they respect the cow a lot, but they believe it's their God. So all this come about because of understanding. So when you have the understanding, you can explain things clearly. Otherwise, it's a misconception because they don't understand what you do to them. It's you are paying, he not don't use the word paying respect, you are worshipping, is it? An image, an idol. That's why he call you idol worshipper. So when you have the Dhamma, you will be very confident and you can explain things to people. No, we are not idol or image worshipper. We don't worship anybody. Even the gods, the deities, they are just gods and deities. We don't worship them. We share merits with them. Ah, you can tell them all this. Understand? Yeah. Yeah, the mic. Yes, Jay, yes.
That is what we all understand. We don't worship. But there are a lot of Sunday Buddhists.
Yeah.
Sunday Buddhists
cannot explain
that
all
they
this.
Are worshipping.
Yes.
And no matter what you tell them, they're going to go and worship.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, because they will treat the image as what, no? Like any other god, no? They go and worship. And really, really ask for favor on them. Especially the early days when I heard a lot of these older generation people, they used to speak in Hokkien on popi popi putso popi. You can understand, huh? Also you cannot understand. It's in Hokkien. Popi popi means in Cantonese how you say po yao po sai po yao po yao po yao po sai. They ask the Bodhisattva and the Buddha to bless them. No? Understand? Because they say, I have made offering to you. Understand? So you have to bless me and all those things. So you can't blame people for saying that you are idol worshipper when you yourself do not understand what you are doing. That's why when I saw my mother offer the slaughtered chicken and the piglet to the deity in return for their favor to bless us, protect us, and help us in our exam and all those things. When I saw my mother did that, that time I was still very young, I say, if this is Buddhism, forget about it. I'm not going to even look at it. That was the reason why, not until I received that book, What Buddhists Believe, in Form 5, 1971, I never looked at Buddhism. Even after my Form 5 exam, a group of us classmates went and tried to look for truth, search for truth. The first place we went to was a church, where the church was more organized. Then after that, we even went to the mosque. Then we went to a lot of other Hindu temples, and we even end up with Baha'i and all those things. But I never go to Chinese temple all that time. I thought what my mother was doing was Buddhism. Not until I saw that book, What Buddhists Believe, Chief Reverend Kis Vinamara. He said, what my mother did was Chinese tradition and practices. Wow, then there was so much joy inside the heart. Then I want to know what the real Buddhist teaching was. Then the moment he explained the Four Noble Truths, he didn't really explain, he just mentioned the Four Noble Truths. The moment my nature read that one, straight away it knew inside, deep inside. No need to search. This is the true teaching. That's it. Finish. Nobody can teach like that. Nobody can summarize all our truth just like that into just four very simple noble truths. Then that time very funny. Yes. Pass the mic to Yen Chan. You repeat. When you were in Fo Kwang. otherwise the recording.
Or when I was in Phó Quang Sơn, they actually kept telling us, lê m hai bai Phật, lê hai kinh Phật.
Ah, yeah, chun Phó, correct. You are not worshipping the Buddha. You are paying your respect. Then expressing your gratitude towards the Buddha. And you recall to mind the great nine great virtues of the Buddha. That's why under the four objects of veneration, you remember when we chant Vandami Chetiyang Sabbam Sabbatane Su Patete Trang Saririke Datu Mahabohing Buddha Rupang Sakalang Sada. So all these four objects of veneration, you have to pay your respect. And what are they? The Chetiya. Then you have your Bodhi tree. Then you have your relics of the Buddha. Then you have your Buddha image, Rupang. These are objects of veneration. You have to venerate them and pay your respect because they symbolize many things. So when you understand this, that these are objects of veneration, means when you pay respect to the Buddha image, it is for you to recall to mind the nine great virtues of the Buddha. It's not the image. The Buddha is not the image. But the image is a symbol for you to call to mind, to recall to mind his nine great virtues. How wonderful a being he is. How special and unique a being he is. He is not only enlightened. He is fully enlightened. And because of his full enlightenment, he has this teaching that is so beautiful, that can liberate living beings' mind, awaken them, and free them from all suffering. That is the Buddha that we go for refuge. That is the Buddha we pay our respect, we venerate, and we will express our deep gratitude. So this understanding are very important, very deep. And you have this, you can explain this, you become different. You have a lot of joy. And I did that before when I was in Brickfield, the early days. There are many foreigners who used to come and visit. Then I would smile to them. Then I would say, are you new? They say, yeah, we are visitor. I say, which country are you from? Then they will tell me what country. Even at our Cameron Highland place, retreat, sometimes there are also foreigners that come and visit. You realize that? Yeah? The white people, the Westerners. There were a few occasions I talked to some of them, and they asked very good questions. They are so, what you call, naive. And they are really naive, but they have some affinity. That's why they like that place. And they want to know, what is this image? Why are you all worshipping this image? Then I have to explain, we are not worshipping this image. This image has great meaning. It allows us to recall to mind their great virtue. These are great beings who came before. You may not believe in rebirth, but in our Buddhist tradition, we have this understanding that this is not the only life we live in this universe. We have been living in this universe for eons and eons of birth and death. And this is only one of it, one segment of it. Of course, they will become very curious, then they ask you more questions. But the way you express yourself, explain to them, and they can feel you. They know that you are different. You have been very sincere. You are not all out to deceive them or take advantage of them or cheat them. You are there to actually help them understand, be of service to them. Then they like to talk to me. I don't know why. Then they will always smile. Oh, now I understand. They say, oh, no wonder you look different. Then sometimes they ask, why are you here? Oh, I'm here conducting a meditation. Oh, you conduct meditation. So all these things can arise. When you have the Dhamma, you have all this understanding. You can actually play your part. You can become very different. And you can help many people understand the teaching in a more easier manner. Well, a lot of Buddhists, or so-called Buddhists, or I should say traditional Buddhists, or Chinese once-a-year Buddhists, they really don't understand how beautiful this Buddha Dhamma is, this teaching of the Buddha is. I tell you, when you can explain this to them, they will be full of joy, full of, indirectly, pride also. As a Chinese, they feel very, very good. There is a lot of pride in them. So after they understand this, you can tell them, you don't have to be like shameful to tell them that you are a Buddhist. There are a lot of these once a year Buddhists who only come to the temple during Vesak day. They don't know what Buddhism is all about, so they cannot express it, they cannot explain it. So when people ask, what is your religion? They dare not even say they are Buddhist. They will prefer free thinker. Understand? Because they feel very shy when they are asked, ah, you are a Buddhist? What does Buddhist believe in? What does Buddhist do? What is the Buddhist teaching? They totally don't have much understanding of this topic. So because of that, they find it better to call themselves free thinker. Free thinker, thank you. So that word they like to use. Free thinker means free, nothing to like hold on to. So like a free mind, free thinker. What's the time now? We have to end earlier. Oh, you have to end already. Oh, sorry. Because today is Teacher's Day, you all have something for us. You should thank Sister Padmasri and the rest who use the Kayamita Fund to buy this flower with the fruits to offer to me and my wife as Teacher's Day. So, okay, we will end here. Introduction, page 11. We end here. Okay, I think by next Tuesday there will be no class. Sorry, I will be traveling to Manila with Alicia, Freddie, and my wife. Then I'll be back on Tuesday night. So the following week, our class will resume. So we'll do a quick sharing of merits with the devas. Akasata ca bumata deva naga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa cirang rakan tu loka sasana itawata camehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati sidiya hidang menya tinang hotu Sukita hontunya teyo, hidang menya tinang hotu. Sukita hontunya teyo, hidang menya tinang hotu. Sukita hontunya teyo, imina punyang kamina. Hame bala samagamo, satang samagamo hotu. Yawa nivana patiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to the Lord Buddha and all the worthy ones. Then we shall end. Okay. There's this page, publisher's note, I forgot to read to you. Maybe I'll just read through it quickly. The Buddha and his teaching provides a good source of information for those who wish to understand the life of the Buddha and his fundamental teaching. The book was first published in 1942. The present edition has been revised and expanded though primarily intended for the student and beginners rather than scholar,
the reader will find it an extremely valuable handbook offering a sound foundation for the basic tenet of Buddhism as found in its original Pali tradition. Besides providing a comprehensive account of the life of the Buddha and his chief disciple, the moral and ethical conducts, code of conducts, accumulating to the 10 perfection, a considerable portion of the book deals with current issue in Buddhist studies regarding karma, rebirth, and nibbana. It also includes an introduction to Buddhist meditation with particular reference to the practice of the four sublime states of Brahma Vihara, namely metta, loving kindness, karuna, compassion, mudita, sympathetic joy, and upekkha, equanimity. The author, the Venerable Narada Mahathera, is a well-known Buddhist missionary from Sri Lanka. He is also the author of many Buddhist publications, well used among students of Buddhism. We are grateful to him for his kind permission, enabling this reprint to be effected in Malaysia. Okay, that's all for today. So now you can have your ceremony. So this is the one that Sister Padmasuri has bought. You all can have a look. I pass the mic over to you.
Dear Kayanamitas, today is Teacher's Day. So shall we call upon Brother Song to represent all the Kayanamitas to present this bouquet of flowers to Brother Teo and Mrs. Teo as a token of our appreciation, gratitude, and respect to Brother Teo and Mrs. Teo. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Okay. Yeah.